What up, everybody? This is Double G for the Fight Game Podcast here with John LaRocca. And John, I can't wait for tomorrow's Wrestling Observer newsletter. It's going to be pretty explosive. We're going to talk about the CM Punk story that Sean Ross Sapp put out earlier today, because there's things in that story that I've heard, and the fact that Sean verified those things makes me believe that you know, that's probably what's going on with these guys. So we'll talk about that. We'll do our normal Dynamite big picture review. We'll do our thumbs up and thumbs down. But the other thing I wanted to ask you about, and we'll just quickly start here because I haven't even finished it yet. But did you get a chance to see the Dusty biography?
No, I heard it was really good, though.
It's really good. I mean, it's very WWE. So, you know, his him being in WWE in the late 80s and 1990, and then the angle with the Dustin and Cody, like, that gets a lot more time than you would think. But obviously, Cody and Dustin have a big part of this story in their telling. I think, you know, probably if you're a Crockett guy or something, you wished that they stayed on some of those stories a little bit more. But I thought it was really well done. And Dustin Rhodes, man, that guy steals the show. He's so earnest, and you just feel for that dude and when he's talking about his dad. But yeah, that's something that I think you would enjoy. And, you know, go if you can find it or whatever on A&E, go ahead and grab it, because I think you'll enjoy it. Before we kick off the CM Punk and the thumbs up and big picture and all that stuff, I wanted to mention that on the Fight Game Podcast Extra, which I mentioned last week that debuted, both shows went great. Thanks to everyone for checking in. Interviewed John Pollock this morning from Post Wrestling, and he will be the third show, which will be in the feeds on Saturday. The live version of the podcast, because it's on video, it's already on the YouTube channel. So if you want to check it out before then, it's on our YouTube channel at Fight Game Media. But the podcast version will be up on Saturday. So a lot of fun there. And I also wanted to mention, it should be up. If you're listening to this, Mike and JD, who do the Brace for Impact show on Fight Game Media, and they've been a guest on this show a couple different times, they kind of changed the branding of their show. They were like, you know, Impact is great, but it might be a little limiting, so we're going to do more of a general wrestling discussion type show. And they rebranded as the Mike and JD show. Mike put together a graphic. We got some, we'll have some graphics up and stuff and logos and such for the show. But yeah, check that out. Their debut show in your feed right now if you subscribe to the Fight Game Media Network. And good luck to them, because I know they've been kind of itching to not to skip out on Impact, but just for Impact to not be, you know, 75% of their show. So they want to branch out, but they will still mention and talk a little bit about Impact. Okay, so I think we should just get right into it, because there are some very interesting things to talk about this week. And I'm very intrigued. You know, the funny thing is you and I don't really talk wrestling much during the week, because we kind of save it for this show. And that is absolutely the case. We had sushi night on Friday, and I haven't talked to you literally since Friday. So we got a lot of catching up to do. Let's kick it off with our thumbs up, thumbs down segment.
Thumbs up, thumbs down.
All right, I did a lot of talking there, so I'm going to let you go first and let you kick off your thumbs up, thumbs down.
I watched the Okada-Sonata match, so my thumbs up is going to be that match. I thought it was fantastic. I kind of just threw it on. I was like, oh, you know, I should go back and watch it. And I kind of skimmed through the show, watched a match here and there, and that main event was tremendous. Great match, great story, great promotional package before it to kind of set the stage of Sonata always coming up short. And I thought it was really, really good. And Sonata looked fantastic, actually showed some personality now. He's now was it the Cold Skull? That was his nickname before. I think so. Right. But now he had a little more fire, a little more personality. Of course, he got rid of the crazy blonde hair. Now he's just a clean cut. He's a handsome dude, you know. Mm-hmm. And just an unbelievable match, and definitely one of the very best of 2023 so far.
All right. Did you? Yeah, you knew what happened before you watched it, right?
Oh yeah, I knew Sonata beat him. Yes,
yeah, because I think if I didn't know, I would have rather watched that match without knowing, because I think knowing kind of spoils it a little bit, because it would have been, you know, I'm not following as closely, and I'm sure, you know, Jeremy Finestone was, oh, you know, you could have smelled that one coming or whatever, but I wanted to be there for the, oh my God, part of it. And obviously I knew, so watching it, I was like, okay, I know he's going to win. But yeah, I would have loved to have been surprised watching that match. I couldn't watch it live. I actually didn't watch it until like 2 or 3 days later.
Yeah, I watched it, like I said, just the other day. So it was well, you know, a few days later. But I still thought it was really good. And you know, to me, I mean, I know the results sometimes doesn't really ruin it for me too much. I mean, yeah, it'd be cool to be surprised. I just don't like that group staying just five guys. Like, that was the stupidest thing I ever heard. I don't know why they. I don't get that at all.
It's the dudes with attitudes of 2023. I think
it's just like Sonata is like this comes off, and it's rightfully so. He is the centerpiece, and he is the crown jewel of these kind of geeks, you know, like Taka, Kanemaru, and does a Doki, you know, it's like, who these, you know, big deal, but Sonata, he comes off as a big star and had an amazing performance, and Okada's great, and I didn't see any really flaws in that match. If there were, I didn't catch them, and it was a star making performance, and it was a match he needed to have when he, you know, to win, and we'll see how he can carry himself as champion going forward, and so we'll see if he makes it all the way to the dome. You know, I think he will.
My thumbs up, and this is someone I think I probably should have gave my thumbs up to this person last week, but I was so impressed by the Endeavor story breaking, and yeah, I know, you know, WWE probably told specifically CNBC, you know, or they specifically broke it to CNBC, but my thumbs up is going to Tony Khan, and my thumbs down may be slightly related to Tony Khan as well, so this is going to be a weird one for me. But the reason why I'm going here is because I've talked about this a lot, which is the All In show that we talked about last week, the Wembley show, and I don't think I thought about it in the sense of that this is a really big bet that he's making, because we've got Double or Nothing coming up that I will be at, and then Forbidden Door, and then All In, and then All Out, and now we have this special June 21st Chicago Dynamite. And you know what it tells me is that Tony really believes he's got some stuff up his sleeve that is going to get them back to maybe where they were. I don't know if they could get exactly to where they were when Danielson came in and Punk was in and Adam Cole came in. But he feels that they're going to be hot. And so he is betting big. And like, that's all you really want, right? You want from Tony Khan to bet on what they're doing and to believe that he's got the resources, he's got the ideas, he's got the guys to have a hot summer and fall. And I'm really, really intrigued about where they're going to go with this stuff. You know that I think Kenny Omega is kind of the key to a lot of what they do. And they have to, you know, he's still a part of this Elite. And it does look like we're heading to some sort of multi-person match at Double or Nothing.
Yeah.
But I think he's like, after that, I think he's got to be distanced a little bit and get back to being a singles and get back to being, you know, the intriguing guy that I really enjoy. But whatever it is, whether it's an Omega run upcoming, whether it's Punk coming back, whether it's something with MJF that is going to be spectacular, like he just must think that they have some really good stuff coming up, and to bet that big. And you know, there's other stuff that's out there as far as, you know, business stuff, right? And we'll get to that with the full Sean Ross Sapp report. But it does look like things are moving and shaking once again for AEW, and hopefully in a very positive way. Hopefully, no matter what, we're going to have stuff to talk about. So,
yeah,
you know, win, lose, or draw, we'll have tons of content. But yeah, that I think Tony Khan betting so big shows a lot of faith, and he backs it up with this pocketbook. It's his money, man. He's mm-hmm. putting the money in. He's making the deals. He's got the relationships with Warner Brothers Discovery. All of these things, I just thought, man, he's really showing out. And I hope, you know, for his case, that he does have the stuff that will be needed for all of these upcoming big shows.
Yeah, I think, he's gambling big. And if and when, I should just say when Punk comes back, I think he needs to let Punk steer creative again, like steer his own creative, because I thought the best stuff creative wise in AEW was the Punk stuff. And I think, but that's going to be an interesting dance when you have Punk and the Elite guys. And I mean, they want to work together, but you know, working together sounds good. You know, let's do business. But when you're doing business with the egos and stuff, we'll see what happens. But I think Punk kind of, at least for me, has proven that, you know, the stuff that he was involved with usually was really made sense, and it was the best.
Yeah, you were high on his run. You were big time high on it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. So I'm looking forward to him coming back, and they definitely need it. And my thumbs down is Tony Khan, because I thought Dynamite was an absolute total shitbag. Like, I just thought it was a really stinker of a show, booking wise. And, you know, I'm sure some people like matches, but just booking wise, it just was so, like, it was almost like the worst of Raw Crash TV in a lot of ways, you know, in my opinion. Just throwing stuff out there and beating people that shouldn't have been beaten at this point in time. A lot of stuff like that. We can probably go through it, but I don't know. I just couldn't find a positive in that show last night. I tried, but I just couldn't find anything. And I usually find something. The only thing I did like was, actually, I did like something. I like Darby when he's talking with some bass in his voice and not being all, you know, depressed and emo-ish. But like I want fired up Darby more.
All right. My thumbs down is also related, but it has more to do with, I guess, what I'd call a human resource discussion or decision around Jeff Hardy. Word got out a couple hours before the show that he was backstage, and I think folks believed he would be on television as well. You know, there's a, it's kind of a double standard, because WWE has had their fair share of guys doing the drinking and driving thing. And, you know, from what I understand, they probably somewhat of a good relationship with that Tampa police as well. And maybe there would have been more headlines if not for that good relationship. But in this case, after the amount of times that Jeff Hardy has had this issue and possibly more issues, it just seemed a little tone deaf to me to bring him back just to do a run in like, everything is fine, we're all good here. And, you know, believe me, I hope that Jeff Hardy is good. I hope that he's, you know, he's figured things out and he knows how to balance this wrestling thing with, with some of the things that he has as far as bad habits and problems and such. But it just did not ring very honest or true to me, just to bring him back for nothing, for no one to say nothing. Oh, Jeff Hardy's back. Oh, yay. And it's like,
I mean,
this is a tough one.
It's a tough one. So what are you having to do? Go up there and apologize? That's something that didn't happen on television. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, what do you do? I mean, that could be something you do on a press conference before the show or after.
Okay, so there's I know there's a difference, right? There's a big difference in both of these two dudes. Moxley handled this thing way differently, right? Mm-hmm. And that was probably a lot of his choice to handle his comeback from the rehab much differently than they handled this. But I don't know. It felt honest. It felt like, if you know, love me, hate me, I'm not perfect, but you know, I'm coming back, and here's why. Mm-hmm. And maybe you can't do that with Jeff Hardy because he's probably hurt a lot of people and upset a lot of people with some of these decisions. And I don't know if he had to. He probably didn't even have to. It just to bring him back as if we blinked and he was gone for a few weeks, and now he's just back like it's normal storyline. I didn't necessarily feel like that was the best way to do it either.
Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't do anything on camera in any kind of apology, but I think if he did the press tour after, you know, talking to the top media people about his rehab and where he's at mentally and out, unfortunately, you know, Jeff, you know, it's, you know, you don't want to, it's hard to say, hey, this guy shouldn't get another chance. Like, everyone kind of deserves another chance, but he's had multiple chances. Yeah. So, and you're kind of just waiting for, like, what's this going to happen again? And we kind of, you know, we root against, you know, against that. We want him to be successful, but
yeah.
I thought the whole execution of that was just lame in itself and on top of a lot of stuff on the show, but he's back. Yeah,
that whole execution was screwed up. Like,
yeah,
I don't think Matt Hardy knew what was going on.
No, I didn't think anyone did, or something was off. It was just one thing after another in the show. I just, like, you know, I'm like, when's this gonna end? Like, yeah, some really poor decisions. So, I mean, I hope, like I said, I know you're hopeful that Tony has the right, you know, path to Wembley in August, but that's what I'm saying. I hope he leans towards his creative people that he has in that roster, like a CM Punk, MJF, you know, and, you know, because I think he's going to need a lot of help to get there at that point. So
it was definitely the Dynamite where you knew, you know, after weeks of big stuff and announcements, he likes to take weeks off sometimes. You know, this was kind of a week off for him.
Not really, though. If you think about the Bucks returning and Omega, you know, coming out, like, I thought that was very, like, simplistic, I guess to say, or very, I mean, uncreative. Like, the old, here comes the guy from the front, and here comes the other two from the behind. Like,
I just thought it was a miss of a babyface moment.
And just a lot of things. We could probably go match by match, segment by segment. That's how bad this show, to me, this is how bad that show was. But I mean, even the end, like, hey, they're starting announcing these matches for Rampage are just god awful. Like, Sean Spears is back. Hey, by the way, go to social media, check out his promo. Like, dude, if his promo wasn't good to be on television, I ain't fucking going on social media checking it out. I'm sorry. Sean Spears hasn't meant nothing for like a year and a half, or maybe even longer than that. Probably fucking 3 years since he's been in the company.
That's the chairman you're talking about there.
I take a chair, man. Get out of here.
I think we're going to have to start looking at Rampage as Sunday Night Heat. And the value of the type of things you get on that show is probably going to be Sunday Night Heat. Because, and we'll get to that in a second when we talk about the CM Punk thing.
Mm-hmm. The only thing I saw on Rampage, I thought, you know what? I'm happy for Jeff Hawkins. He gets to watch Emi Sakura versus Ty Valkyrie. That's the only thing I said when I saw the Rampage rundown there. That was said twice, like in like the last, going into the last commercial break and coming out of that commercial. It's just Excalibur just throwing out names at us. Like, this is going to be on the do-do-do-do-do-do. All right, man, I got to watch that. I'm not going to watch that. I'm sorry.
They're probably going to do a pretty decent number too, because they're coming after, late, but right after the basketball.
Yeah, game. Right. Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about the kind of the big thing, the big main topic before we get into AEW. CM Punk. He liked that photo. For folks not watching on the video, we're using JJ Williams's scrum photos from the infamous All Out post presser there. So Sean Ross Sapp reported today, and I'm not going to read the whole thing because his, you know, he's got a subscription service, the Patreon, and you should go subscribe to that. I'm not going to, read out the whole thing here. But the idea behind his post, and again, these are things that I've heard and I have been hearing for, gosh, for a little while now. But the fact that Sean has validated them, you know, is really good, because then that means that, you know, this is what the story is. So CM Punk definitely wants to come back. He's wanted to come back for a while now. And the idea that they're going to do this Saturday show, whatever it's called, Andrew thinks it may be the collision show that they, you know, they took out that trademark. The thing that's different about this, and I also heard this, is it's not going to be a 6:05 show. They want it to be in the prime time of a Saturday night primetime show. And the way Sean described it is a soft roster split to accommodate the preferences of talent who wanted to stay separate of the particular situations. So to me, now I'm not saying that this is exactly what Sean wrote. This is what I know and what I sort of think is going on here, which is you have people who, you know, who very much enjoy CM Punk, and people who maybe don't enjoy CM Punk as much as others. And we know who those people are. And so the idea of having a split crew for these shows, the brand split thing is kind of interesting, though, because, you know, Tony Khan likes to kind of zig when WWE zags, right? And this is WWE roster split. But is this the CM Punk show and the other guys are the Elite show and the BCC show? Like, how is that going to work? That is interesting to me. But it tells me is that Tony Khan and probably his business partners in Warner Brothers Discovery, they really believe Punk is worth it to create a second show. And that's why I think Rampage becomes Sunday Night Heat, because I think you can't have these two shows like that. Like Rampage maybe, you know, becomes Dark Elevation or something. I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe it becomes ROH. I think that would be the best thing for it, is to just become ROH Rampage. But to have these two shows, whether it's going to be an A show and a B show, or a 1A and a 1B, or if they're equal, I don't know if they're going to be, you know, SmackDown and Raw, they're both on the same network versus one being on broadcast. But it seems like it is really about making sure that they can bring Punk back and make sure that the locker room is okay with it and that people can work together and such. So what do you think about that part of this story, which is fairly new information, I would say?
I mean, I wouldn't say it's that new, because I heard about it like a week ago now.
Yeah, you're close to some of this stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, people who aren't, that is really the first time that they heard that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think I'm curious to see how it's going to work if they go this route, kind of like you said, a quote, soft brand split. You're going to get people that, you know, want to be on the Elite side and want to be on the Punk side. But then you start taking away from, so I think it's going to hurt both shows in many ways, I think, you know, but maybe the hope is that they can do it where these two brands don't cross paths. And when they come to Wembley Stadium, they finally do. And it means something. So we'll see. If they can really do that, gosh, I can't imagine. Dynamite is the Elite show. We're gonna get the Best Friends. We're gonna get the Elite. We're gonna get all the wackiness on that show, and then we're gonna get serious wrestling pop, hopefully, on, which would be great for me. I mean, that's why I prefer. So, but it's going to be like, well, we know these people kind of had this big argument and this big fight in the locker room. And, you know, we kind of want to see Omega interact with Punk. And maybe we'll get that in the beginning, but then they'll just go their separate ways for a while and then can bring it back. It's very interesting. And I just kind of wish they would all just work together on one show and make Dynamite, you know, hot again, right? But I think you take Punk. If people start seeing Punk on just Saturday, I might just go watch Saturday. I think the TBS people realize, dude, like, you guys needed Punk. He was our big star. You know, he drew this massive rating for Rampage and great ratings for Dynamite shows. His segments are top rated. You know, I think the executives are kind of maybe ones that help broker this deal. You know, like, we need this guy back. Figure it out, because, you know, he is their top star, our top star. He's our big player.
And I wonder, so I mentioned that June 21st show is in Chicago at Wintrust. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if, you know, that is the comeback date for Punk. I wonder if that's the date that he shows up and he's back on that date. You got 2 months and you got a whole pay-per-view in between to set the...
Two pay-per-views, right? Forbidden Door 2?
When is Forbidden Door?
It's usually in June. I just don't know when. I know it's in Toronto this year. I heard Heartbreak Kid's going to be in Toronto for that, possibly.
Oh, no way. I think Forbidden Door is literally the pay-per-view after this Dynamite.
Oh, okay. Okay,
got it. I think. Yeah.
And I think it's smart, of course, to bring back Punk in Chicago. If he's going to be the guy on this Saturday show, I'm guessing you don't want him to be a heel. You want him to be a babyface. So you don't want to debut him in, you know, L.A., you know, in Buck Country to get booed. So you know, have him come back in his home state, Chicago, gets that big heroes reception, and then he moves on to you called it Collision, possibly, as a TV show.
That's what Andrew thinks it's going to be called, or that's just what he's calling it right now.
Mm-hmm. So it's that's why, yeah, I think it's
or,
good movie
or after. Maybe Collision is some sort of reference to the brands unsplitting or the brands coming together, the collision of, I don't know.
Yeah. They're going to have some really fiery promos on that episode of Dynamite between Punk and the Elite. And we're gonna be all like, oh man, this is great. And they're gonna be like, you go your side, I'm going to go on my side, you know? And they're like,
And who knows, maybe the soft brand split or the soft roster split, maybe it's not going to be as definitive. Maybe it's going to be sometimes guys are on this show and sometimes guys are on this show, but it just gives them the opportunity to not always have them in the same locker room, in the same arena. So, yeah, you know, there's a bunch of things that they could do in order to do that. Or, you know, maybe it's just to get the fans to think that when these guys are in the same arena, that all hell's going to break loose. I know that's got to be some of it, too.
Yeah, and I just hope that with this soft brand split, people get opportunities, you know, to be on television that kind of been maybe pushed to the YouTube show. And, you know, so we'll see if anyone can shine that. My God, can Abaddon not just do the Halloween show every year?
You really want to see Abaddon?
No, weekly? I don't, but I'm just saying.
Okay. Nothing against Abaddon either.
We have a Cyrus Young sighting this week. We did Milwaukee. I think last time there in Milwaukee, he was the open challenger for the TNT title or something like that. What was this guy doing this last time? Poor Silas Young. That's all right. He did a good job getting destroyed out there.
All right. Let's talk about Dynamite. And we'll hit this segment here. Oh, my goodness. It didn't even play.
The Big Picture.
He said the wrong button is what happened.
My Ole Anderson Scorpion, Black Scorpion voice.
The Big Picture.
Sting.
Hey, if we can get some Ole Anderson Black Scorpion impersonators, throw that voice over to
I did it.
We'll get it to put
pretty put decent job, and I had an angle going on APW where there's a mystery voice of the PA system. That was me. I took it over as that in honor of Ole Anderson. Yeah.
Oh man, that's awesome. Yeah. Of all the stories to steal
I used to like taking stories that just kind of they were just kind of missed, and I wanted to try to do like do something positive out of it. Like, you remember, I don't know if you remember this, in WCW 1991 January, they had the sexiest wrestler competition.
Tom Zenk.
And Tom Zenk won it. Just like announced it on a random Saturday.
Missy involved in like interviewing him or something?
Yeah, that was about it. Nothing came out of it. But I had it where like my top babyface champion won it and the top heel was pretty pissed off about it and broke the trophy and KO'd the babyface and so I like doing stuff like that. It was fun.
All right. Wonder what you're going to steal for your future booking plans from this Dynamite show.
Nothing.
Come on. All right. Let's start from beginning to end here. We'll start with, the world title picture, because Darby, he opened up the show with a match against Swerve and he beat Swerve. Swerve hurt his foot. And Darby won a fast-paced match. I'm sure these guys have probably wrestled a bunch of different times, especially mm-hmm. from where they're from. I heard a lot of people really liked this match. I thought it was okay. I just wish that Swerve wasn't the guy who lost.
Stupid. I didn't watch Rampage, but I know what happened. They got rid of Parker and the tattoo guy because they're green as grass.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, what are we gonna do these embassy guys? They ain't doing nothing. They signed Brian Cage again. Let's put Swerve with those guys. We'll call it Mogul Embassy. That was just past Friday. And this Wednesday, he's losing clean in the middle. And then people out there are like, but John, they never booked before. They're like, he got his heat back at the end of the night. Yeah.
I'm sure that's how they
will pacify
themselves,
Yeah. But like, listen, he attacked Keith Lee. He was cold as cold, man. So you're not going to get, then he's going to be in a feud with Keith Lee again, who's cold as cold. So it means nothing at this point, right? Horrible stuff. And the match was just like, they did some great moves, but it was just a bunch of moves and they survived a million things. At one point, freaking Swerve gets Darby's belt and he's just whipping the hell out of Darby. And referee Aubrey's just like waving her hands in the air like she just doesn't care, hey, stop it. But then when Darby takes his Swerve's shoe off, starts biting his foot, she's like, in there, she can't do that. No,
not a good referee day for sure on this show.
No, day. Anyways, but yeah, it was just I'm like, uh-oh, this is not a good sign. And it just kind of kept going down. I mean, we got some WCW 2000 stuff hitting us. Like, it was wild.
The best part of this show was the interview segment. Because Darby wins this match.
That's good.
He's sitting in the corner. He's tired. He's exhausted. He just had this fast-paced match.
But with his jacket on.
He was cold, man.
He gets cold.
He wasn't feeling well.
Yeah.
And I thought he cut a really strong promo again. It almost makes me wonder, because he is clearly above and beyond the right choice to be in this match.
Mm-hmm.
Almost to the point of where I'm like, are they specifically booking Jungle Boy and Sammy to look inferior to him?
I don't think Tony sees it that way. I think he sees like, well, these are my four pillars, guys. They know this. And we've been talking about it for like 4.5 years. There's our four pillars. They know. They're into it. This is going to be awesome. It's going to be great.
He's outshining them completely. I thought his...
Blowing them away.
His promo was very unique. It was a little old school, but with a new school thing because, you know, he did the thing where he bought the parents a house, let the dad retire. And that's like old babyface stuff. But then he brought in like the new school stuff, which, you know, you would never talk about back then, you know, about his having to go see a therapist because he got newfound fame as an AEW superstar when he never had that before. And he had to learn how to deal with that and learn how to not change who he was and who he fundamentally wanted to be. And I thought that stuff was absolutely fantastic. I'm just watching this guy going like, let's go. Like, let's just forget about these other two dudes. Let's just go straight ahead with him and MJF.
I'm listening to Darby cut this promo. And you're right. Classic babyface stuff, old school stuff. And like you said, new school stuff, right? A little about more of the, you know, personal issues more out in the open, right? That people can relate to that they didn't want to talk about it in the past. And it's almost like this could be AEW's version. Speaking of Dusty Rhodes, Ric Flair, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, instead of the common man cowboy, you got the kid from the streets, you know, who doesn't forget where he comes from, you know, and then you got this rich kid who would do whatever it takes to, you know, become the greatest of all time. And that doesn't matter who he steps on, right? Even his whole mother, if he asked you, right?
Yeah.
And like, I just think, yeah. And I'm like, and then all we get is just Jungle Boy watching the monitor. They do this every week. They think this is the other two guys will just have them watch the monitor and shake their head. And, you know, it's just,
you know, the really other reason why I kind of wonder if they're specifically wanting Darby to stand out is because they show this video of Christian and Luchasaurus later. That has to be involving Jungle Boy, right?
Do we want that though?
I don't want it. I was fine with no Luchasaurus, but what else is Luchasaurus coming back for?
Unless they become an official tag team and they're going to go after the FTR and the tag team titles. You think CM Punk's be like, Christian, can we not take the dinosaur with us onto the good show, the kid show? They can go to the kid show. They need a Barney over there.
So, dude, it's great promo, great back and forth. MJF's fired up. Darby's getting his licks in. And all of a sudden, Sting comes out.
Uh-huh.
And I almost thought, I was like, huh. Maybe they're just pivoting on this whole thing. And here's the superstar, the real superstar of the guys. But they didn't. Sting did not lean into the idea that he was there to face MJF. And MJF didn't poke his chest to make him want to fight him. So maybe he just is there to be Darby. Like, I got Darby's back, brother. Like, don't think that you're going to be able to pull your normal stuff because I got his back. But for a second there, I was like, Sting's the biggest superstar in this ring right now. And, you know, he even did goofy stuff with pom-poms. It still didn't really mess it up for me. But yeah, I do wonder if there's a little bit of a thought process that, you know, Sting talking about his retirement and maybe he wants one last shot at the big belt. And, you know, maybe they do that on one of the upcoming big shows that they have as a, you know, maybe not the biggest main event for a title match possible, but as a nice, you know, as a nice special attraction kind of match.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there could be money there, but I didn't like this segment. I thought Sting kind of took away from Darby. I don't think he added to Darby here or helped Darby out. In my opinion, I thought the pom-pom thing was silly. I thought it was a little too cute, honestly. But I would love to see MJF versus Sting. I think MJF's good enough to really get a match at Sting. It's not going to be, you know, Flair Sting, but it's, you know, it'll be fine for a short time. And I'm sure they could have came up with a creative way for him to earn a title shot, or maybe just MJF just wants to beat a legend. You know,
Sting called out Cody and Ric Flair in the same promo.
Yeah. I don't think Sting really cares much at all. I think he's just having his own fun. Shoot, no, and Kevin Nash, don't forget. Shout out Kevin Nash. So he's
called out Big Kevin. Yeah, and
he's
Scott
like,
Hall.
Man, remember the days? But then, but now we're doing this. But you know, I think, yeah. God, I kind of wish. I hope Tony's pivots from Sammy and Jungle Boy soon. Like I said, maybe a little three-man round robin tournament, you know, to get him, you know, just to get him away from this. Because I think Darby and MJF is becoming a much bigger match, and that, you know, they could do it right. It could be definitely a main event worthy match. And then, like, and then MJF referenced, like, that opening match of that pay-per-view was the best match on the prior that pay-per-view. And that was that in 2019 or 2020? 2019, wasn't it?
I don't even remember.
Yeah, and they had the opener. That was a really great match. And, you know, people remember it. So I hope they could, kind of do that again in a one-on-one match.
The next kind of big picture segment was the return of Wardlow. We hadn't seen this guy in a little while. Will Hobbs was in his car. You know, he's a champ, so he's, you know, he's bossing people around. You know, here, park my car. He didn't pull the Eddie Murphy from Nutty Professor though. The Buddy Love, where he gives the car keys to the guy, and he's like, a scratch in my car is a scratch in your ass. I wanted Will Hobbs to have like some like nice little pun there, but he just did the intimidating thing. And so complete angle alert. We knew something was happening to this poor car. He you know, I don't know if he just got it or if this is the first time we've seen it, and it was going to get destroyed. And it absolutely did get destroyed. Will Hobbs won a quick match. And then we saw Wardlow, basically pick this car up with the forklift and lift it on its side and ruining the car. And then Will was so mad and he's just wants to beat up everybody. And then all of a sudden Wardlow's music plays and he comes out, and then they kind of go at it a little bit though. Will got out of there and Wardlow had the belt. He was holding it. So I think we're getting that match next week, but I don't know. It just seemed like, this was like 3 weeks of stuff into 1 week, and I wish we would have seen the 3 weeks instead of just cramming it all because we have match next week.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yes, they just said on the show that QT just gave him this car, so we knew it was going to be destroyed by someone. Ended up being Wardlow. I mean, it looks kind of goofy when three guys are watching some guy destroyed their car on a big screen and there's down the rampway, like, we can't, there's nothing for us to do, you know, especially a guy like Hobbs, who you probably think he'd go out there and start throwing hands with Wardlow before he was able to do anything to that car.
Okay. So we already mentioned the Jeff Hardy thing and him being back in my thumbs down, but I hope that this angle is not the reason why you do all of that to bring him back with Ethan Page, Lee Moriarty, Matt Hardy. It just seems like we could have brought him back for like a bigger reason. Now, maybe this is going to be like a one and done here. But yeah, you know, Matt Hardy was really confused about the stipulation in the contract that he bamboozled Ethan Page with when he lost to Hook. It was supposed to get them out of the contract, but then all it did is create a stipulation for them to get out of the contract. I'm not exactly sure which one it is, or maybe it's both, or maybe he's just confused. So all that being said, like, this is not big enough to me for Jeff Hardy's return. So I hope that this is like a one and done match. Hardy boys back together again, and then let's move on, because I think it's kind of a waste of bringing back Jeff Hardy.
What could you do with the Hardy boys at this point in their career? There's the FTR match, right?
Yep.
I think they haven't done that match yet. They did the Young Bucks versus the Hardys already.
I from what I understand, there may be an idea to do like an actual program rather than just the match, but I don't know. I mean, that could be a reason, you know, if you're Jeff Hardy, or if, you know, to bring Jeff Hardy could be a bigger, another match like that. Like those two that you said, those are reasons to bring him back.
I like that Matt Jeff Hardy kept the streak going of just truly crushing some of that swanton. Poor Lee Moriarty was the victim on his return there. This was a complete mess. Matt Hardy, like you said, was like, we're out of the contract. Wait, but then if we win, we're out of the contract again. Like, what are you talking about? Like, and Matt's really in rough shape. Like, you watch him run around, move around the ring. He moves, but his legs are bowed. You know, he's been through the wars and all that stuff and done a lot of the craziness. It's really copped him. You think more Jeff, right? But it just looks visibly more on Matt. So, and then where's Quinn? Is he still hurt? Mark Quinn?
I have no idea. They don't say anything about him.
Well, they said private party, but they didn't, you know, there's only one guy right now. And Stokey's gone. Ethan Page, like, that was the top of their 9 o'clock hour was this segment. Like, I guess they figured, well, Jeff Hardy.
Yeah,
but,
Jeff.
But can you imagine, like, the idea is, like, you click over to see a star and you're seeing Ethan Page. You know, and you're like, well, I can move on. You know,
that was a shot for him, right? I mean, he had the mic all by himself for like 3 minutes or whatever, or 2 minutes.
Kind of just a generic.
Yeah, it was very boring.
And then I think everyone came out with entrance music. You know, each entrance had a music. Just very lame.
All right, the Elite and the BCC, that storyline is progressing. We started with an interview in Kenny Omega's home that said recorded earlier today. So he must have had the Brock Lesnar jet to get to that building so fast. And, you know, he talked about Dawn. Like, it was really about Dawn. Like, you know, you can beat us up. But, man, you take a shot at Dawn and then you see the video of Dawn's head being, like, split in half. Oh, that was gnarly.
No mention of Hangman Page and his eye. No worry about, you know, no concern of that.
No mention of that, but I sort of feel like that's
part of the plan.
Part of the plan, yeah, for a reason. They're not back yet with him. They're still on different pages.
Mm-hmm.
Pun not intended. But then John Moxley and Claudio beat the hell out of Nakazawa and Cutler, so much so that they did not want to pin these gentlemen. The referee had to call a stoppage for ass beating. And so they continued, and Wheeler Yuta got his licks in, and this dude is bleeding, and all of a sudden Omega runs in. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, brother, don't be a hangman. That's literally what I was saying. Don't be a hangman. But he was a distraction so that the Young Bucks could come in from the other side of the ring and get in their super kick stance. And I was like, you know what? If Nakazawa and Cutler are on my team, even if maybe, you know, we make fun of them all the time and, you know, we're kind of mean to them, there should have been like more pissed off fire at running in and trying to defend these poor dudes. Their run-in was, oh, you know, we just want to fool the bad guys, when it should have been like, man, I want to throw my body on top of Nakazawa and Cutler because they're getting destroyed, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. Could have been some... I get it. They're connected to the Young Bucks and Omega, but they're goofball comedy guys. I didn't like that they would give them some hopes, you know, some moments. I thought they should have just destroyed them without giving them nothing, because they're nothing. You know, Nakazawa's a total comedy guy. Cutler, same thing. Like, you didn't need to give them any moments. They just need to get their ass kicked. And then, you know, the Elite Kitty came, made a surprise return and come back. I didn't like the end of the segment where there's Moxes in the corner, and he can't, like, he's just sitting there like, come on, bring it. So stupid. Like, and then they pull him out, and then the girls do the same thing.
Well, he was a fighting heel. Like,
he's a fighting bad guy. That's great booking. Fuck. And so stupid. oh, it was just ridiculous.
So Jamie Hayter was the Hangman of this show, because she just ran in to get beat up, and then before Britt came out to get to save her.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying I'm not really. I don't have confidence, Tony, but I can see if he leaned to the smarter people on his roster, the smarter team members that he can really trust to give him those ideas to really build to Wembley Stadium, I think he'd be in a good position. But if he wants to do it on his own, because he wants to, you know, do it on his own, like he always says, like, it's me, then I'm a little concerned.
All right, main event segment was Keith Lee. I'm just going to start calling him the OG, because that's what he looks like. He just looks like the OG from the neighborhood, like the guy with all the wisdom. Like
he looks like a wizard.
He is a wizard. He and Jericho are both wizards, by the way.
Gandalf Lee, we call him, or something.
You're right, though. He was colder than ice. The fans, it didn't seem like they really reacted to this match very much. You know, Jericho style match with the way that those Jericho's matches usually go, and it looked like, you know, Keith Lee was kind of, you know, he was outsmarting Jericho and using his power to defend and get Jericho in compromising positions, and finally looked like he was gonna win the match. And this guy who runs out, and he's got like he doesn't got a full mask on, but he's got the thing covering his mouth, so you can't see his mouth.
Swerve.
And it's Swerve, and he hits Keith Lee, and Jericho wins the match. And, like, I think maybe it was Excalibur or Shivani or someone basically said when he came out, I was like, oh, that's Swerve. So it's like there's no reason to really be in a disguise.
Well, Swerve's equivalent to the guy that, you know, world's dumbest crooks that put the paper bag over his head but forgot to cut the eye holes out and started, like, running into everything in the store and knocking things over.
But then he got smart and
cut the holes out and started robbing the store. But then he forgot to take this name tag off his shirt.
It may be the look, part of his look, but I don't know. It just seemed a little extra and unnecessary.
Yeah, like, so why would he need to be masked when he's wearing his jacket that says Swerve on it?
Yeah, so.
And why was he wearing a Tickle Me Elmo mask earlier in the night, too? I didn't get that hooded he had on it.
So, obviously, if you've been paying attention, Adam Cole comes out. He doesn't come out to really defend Keith Lee's honor, or he's not really pissed off at Jericho. He just kind of comes out, and he's like, I understand, bro. I know what it's like. I know the frustration. Because nothing happened. Literally nothing happened.
Yeah.
And so he and Keith Lee are walking up the ramp. He does like a one Mississippi as if he's going to turn around to look at Jericho or to stop and turn around and go fight him. But nope, doesn't. And just keeps walking up the ramp. And that is how your show ends. So I guess that we're going to see an Adam Cole and Keith Lee tag team, maybe against Jericho and Daniel Garcia. And in this match, oh my God, Daniel Garcia is interfering at all opportunities of the match, which kind of made it pretty silly for the whole thing.
Yeah, you think Adam Cole would run out and, like, during that, if he really wants to protect his buddy Keith Lee that they have this mutual respect for, think he wanted to come out and try to maybe even the odds, because Daniel Garcia is throughout this match interfering, right? I don't know. Then the glares. And I don't know how Chris Jericho gets this past Tony. You know, Tony, I got this great idea. I think Tony's probably too busy watching Sky Blue stretch, and he's not paying attention. And Jericho knows exactly when to talk to him, and he's like, "That's where he's gonna give him the glare, dude." If this builds to a fucking staring contest, I'll lose my mind.
Maybe it's like it's not gonna be a contract signing. It's going to be a who blinks first loses.
That's what I'm saying. It's a best 2 out of 3 falls. It's like a staring contest, thumb wrestling, and who knows what else.
Hey, man.
Kick the can.
Jericho has done wackier before in his career. Jericho's done stuff with Bob Barker for The Price is Right.
Or just the whole song and dance with MJF.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I mean, I just hope. Can we just get one match, and when, just one match, Cole wins. That's all I want.
Yeah. That'd be good. That's probably the right way to do it. We're pretty much done. Like, you know, there wasn't really a whole lot to talk about on Dynamite as far as the big picture of where things are going. You know, it really is, what AEW does very well is create hype for what fans think is probably coming, but they don't know for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're going to be getting of. I imagine fairly soon, you know, I would say, I don't know, they probably got to start teasing some stuff even more, in a few weeks here. But that is, that's kind of the key to this whole, this stuff is to use your television to create hype for whatever is coming. And not their best effort. I didn't hate it as much as you. I kind of got a kick out of some of the stuff, like Sky Blue being in the wrong position like so many times in that match.
That's on a weekly basis, yeah. But don't worry.
But you know what? But outside of that, I kind of liked the match because, like, man, Toni Storm, I'm really digging her character right now. But
what is it, though? She's just mean.
Yeah, she's mean, but she's wearing all these different outfits. And
I think you just dig her, and I get it.
Well, I do dig her. You know, my running joke for this podcast was, you know, if I was 16 again, that's the poster I'd have on my wall.
Yeah. But I probably have the same one.
I think she's standing out in a company that, unless you're one of the chosen few, it's kind of hard to stand out because there's so many people. And she does, to me, she stands out, you know, pretty much every week, even if she's not always in the best, best matches and stuff to do so.
What'd you think of Jamie Hayter now in the position as, being the one being saved by Britt Baker, the champion?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't like that, but they've been telling that story for a long time now, and we thought it was going to be a tease to something, but it's not yet. I think they like the dynamic that they have with those two.
No real tease other than they hugged after her. She was happy. Jamie Hayter was happy that she saved her.
So. No. I mean, historically. Like, there's historically, it felt like a few different times they were leading to Jamie kind of breaking it off with her, but they haven't gone there yet, and so this is a long story.
What do you think about bringing back NWO Silver, Bullet Club Gold?
Oh, Bullet Club Gold.
Yeah.
It sounded like a tequila. It's like we got gold.
Jay White should have brought in like this big signing, a main event guy, a former world champion. You know, a big to do, and he just, and I called it. Here he is, video package promo with highlights of what happened last week. Nothing from Ricky Starks this week. Nothing. Shit. FTR won the tag team titles last week. Nothing from them. Right?
Because they're going to be on Rampage.
I get it. But could we have something that they just won the belts and just like tell that story? Give him a promo that could have been a pre-tape deal. And then maybe, we'll be live at Rampage. We got more to announce or whatever. Just something that kind of follow back on. And then, what about Hangman Page? Can we get an update?
At least give us an update.
Guy's Where's Bryan Danielson? He's the one that committed the damn near murder. Is he in jail with the Mountie? Like, where is he? I don't get it.
They're in their own universe here with these guys.
Yeah, that's
you know how like when we were not even when we were kids, because I feel like they did this better when we were kids. But I would say wrestling within the last 10 or 15 years, especially WWE, there would be things where something happens on the TV, but somehow the wrestler's not watching the TV, so they have no idea, and then they come to the arena the next week and they still don't know. Like, remember they used to always, they still do it sometimes. WWE thing where, this whole thing that the fans saw and somehow this wrestler doesn't see it. I think in AEW, it's actually, they actually double it because not every wrestler's on every week. So what you have to do is you have to like stop time for the wrestler for like 2 weeks, because then they come back in 2 weeks and they couldn't have seen everything that happened. So, but by then, they're like, that was 2 weeks ago. I can't be that mad.
I was trying to think, like, okay, what's up with Bryan Danielson? Like, where was he during this segment with BCC?
I don't know, man.
Like, shouldn't he be out there?
Should have been out there. The announcer should have said something like, where's Bryan Danielson? Maybe they did. I didn't hear it. But
yeah, I kind of hit the fast forward button on a few of the intros. I might miss something, but
you know, the follow up to the key stuff is not their forte. It is the what's going on in the present, what's going on right in front of us. We're going to talk about that stuff, but we're not going to talk about some of the other stuff, the big picture stuff. And that's why we do this segment, the big picture, because we're kind of. We mm-hmm. want to see what's going on with these big stories and the important stuff, because that's how they're going to sell their pay-per-views. So
I think Tony gets really concerned with the time, obviously. Live television, I get it. But, you know, you got to take a minute or two from these matches. You know, there's no need to give Orange Cassidy and Buddy Murphy all that time to make Buddy Murphy look like a total goof because he can't beat... Orange Cassidy, that match is ridiculous. People that love that match, I don't get it. I don't understand. Like, Buddy Murphy, built like a tank, he gets hit with these high angle DTs, can't get beat with that, right? He kicks out and he's just a monster. But that roll up, dude, that mouse trap, unstoppable, you know, like, give me a freaking break. And that's beyond that is way more than that, man. Buddy is just completely misused. I know you're like, well, he's a six-man tag team champion, La Roca. What are you saying? Like, dude, totally misused. Here, WWE, you know, like, actually, I think he's probably booked better in WWE. You know, he didn't have a title. I'll say the same thing about Swerve, and I'll say the same thing about Keith Lee.
Well,
much
I mean,
better in WWE.
When he was Buddy Murphy, I mean, you kind of had to watch some of the shoulder programming to even see him on TV.
Well, he was featured with Seth for a while and all that. And
I guess he dated Dom's little sister.
I see Rhea on Twitter wrote heartbreak, just a heartbreak with a heart on it. I don't know what that means. I hope that's not an injury. That's all I worry about. Breaking up with Buddy Murphy's okay, but that doesn't mean injury. Yeah.
All right. We're just about done here. By the way, you taking the kids to see Super Mario?
Yes, we did that on Monday. Yes. Yes. A lot of fun.
What'd they think?
Oh yeah. They loved it. Yeah. They want to watch it now. I'm like, well, we got to wait till it gets on, you know, streaming, and I'll buy it. Cause it was a fun movie and
yeah,
you know, so it was a blast. I just wish, like, you know, it's funny. Like, I don't go often to the theaters anymore ever since the pandemic. But like when I used to go all the time, I love going. I love going early. I love going. I love the trailers, right?
Mm-hmm.
But as a parent with little kids, especially, you know, 7, soon to be 5, and, you know, and 3, I'm like, dude, cut these trailers down to like 2 or 3. Let's get this movie going.
Well,
you know,
you just have to show up to the movie 20 minutes late. That's the whole trick.
I guess. But I want to, you know, he saw the Spider-Verse one and mm-hmm. he loved that.
What about
that.
The Ninja Turtles? They showed.
Oh,
the Ninja
dude,
Turtles?
He's totally into Ninja Turtles, right? And I just bought just tonight, actually, as we're talking. Earlier before we got on here, I bought him the. I looked on iTunes, $14.99, the 3 original 1990 movies.
Mm-hmm.
And because I was like, do I want to watch their like mid-2000 movies? And then like PG-13, I'm like, no. So I'm like, you know what? Those other movies are kind of harmless, if I remember when I was a kid.
Yeah, teach him about Vanilla Ice, man. That's how you
Oh, yeah. So he started watching and he's like totally into that. He's like, oh. So he was super excited and he can't wait to watch those tomorrow. Because like, right before bed, I did it. So he was like, I can't wait to watch tomorrow. He's still on spring break. You know, there's a little spring break. They're going to go to like Happy Hollow tomorrow and then. So when we get back, I'm going to watch Ninja Turtles. I'm like, all right, got it.
Awesome. All right, that's going to be it for us. Next week, we're going to be a day late because John just explained his kids are on spring break right now. My stepkids are on spring break next week, and my wife is also on spring break next week, so we're headed to Disneyland, and I haven't been to Disneyland since they built all the new Star Wars stuff, so I'm pretty excited.
Oh, jealous.
So we won't be getting back until Friday, so I asked John if he was available Friday night, so that's when we're going to record. So you'll hear us on a Saturday morning, so one day later than usual, and what's probably going to happen is I think I'm going to record, we'll probably do two segments. We'll do one Fight Game podcast. We'll do a little bit extra for the Fight Game podcast extra on the Fight Game Media Network. So you'll hear John and I on a double, we're going to do a double shot next week. So, all right. Anything, you know what you're doing for Take It Home yet?
Yes and no. I have two things that I want to either do a historical show or I'm going to do something on some recent stuff. But I kind of want to do a history show. I've been watching a lot of Portland wrestling from the 70s. I'm loving it. And
Jim Valley? Did you hook up with Jim Valley? Jim, that's all Jim Valley stuff right there.
I'm not going to have Jim Valley on the show. I should. But yeah, I've been, you know, I've seen this stuff, many of this stuff. And I've been talking to my friend Steve Pardee, who wrestled in Portland. And picking his brain, a lot of these guys. We're actually going to be taking like a trip up to, where's it? Eureka, I think. Moondog Moretti lives, mm-hmm. I think. They're close by, past Santa Rosa there, actually. And we're going to go have lunch with him sometime soon in the next, probably next month.
Oh, wow.
And hang out, tell stories. And I booked Moondog Moretti before at APW, so I know him from there. And then, I just want to keep my ears open, be a sponge, just hear you guys tell stories,
mm-hmm.
and that's all I want to do. And I want to see, I want to hold, Roy Shire. Ed Moretti owns one of the Roy Shire tag team title belts.
Oh wow,
so it'd be cool to see that. You know, it's a rich history.
Isn't that also Nick Wayne's grandfather or something?
Something like that. Like, he's, I don't know, like, yeah, something like that, I believe. I gotta figure it out. I mean, Promise Thomas told me all about it before.
I thought that Moondog Moretti was like Buddy Wayne's father-in-law or something like that, but I honestly don't remember exactly.
I gotta put it all together, but I haven't seen Moondog since that time we booked him in Santa Rosa. And he's a cool dude. So looking forward to that. So hopefully next month we'll get that going. So I'm loving it, man. And it's hard for me to watch this modern wrestling when I'm watching this really good Portland stuff. But that Okada Sonata, man, check it out. Highly recommend it. Tremendous match. But it felt like New Japan of old, man. It really did.
Yeah, that show did to an extent, like a lot of the show that I was able to watch. Mm-hmm. All right, so we're done here. For John, I'm Double G. We will see you when we see you. Peace out.